There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Tuesday. Live local talk over the hour, and you're a big part of it at 343-0106. By the way, it looks like sometime in October, we're trying to get it slated. Congressman Bradley Byrne will join us to talk about what's coming up November 6th, too. And I'm sorry, I just had a brain freeze. We'll put it that way when I said the 8th. November 6th, which is Election Day. I'm sorry. It's been a long day, and it's not getting any shorter. So my mea culpa on that. It was the 6th, not the 8th. By the way, the latest here as of about 20 minutes ago, the latest on Hurricane Florence, North Carolina governor has ordered a mandatory evacuation of the state's barrier islands as Hurricane Florence approaches the East Coast. Governor Roy Cooper said today he had issued a first-of-its-kind state evacuation to help prompt residents of barrier islands, including the Outer Banks, to leave. Speaking of state evacuations mandated, remember that during, I think it was the first term of Bentley, when they, I forget, I didn't know what storm it was. Something was coming in. They did a mandatory evacuation of Mobile County or something like that was announced, and we all just went, what? Remember that? I may have to Google that, see when that was. Governor Cooper said local governments are typically responsible for issuing evacuation orders in North Carolina, and some localities have already issued orders to evacuate. But Cooper said he believed Hurricane Florence will be so fierce, the state needs to provide added incentive for people to leave. Governors in South Carolina and Virginia have also issued mandatory evacuations ahead of the storm. And speaking of Virginia, you know, at Hampton Roads and all the naval assets there, this is what's wild. I remember them talking about this in Hawaii as well when the last hurricane, not Olivia, but the one before, was heading towards Hawaii, and that the ships, battleships, all the destroyers, all heading out. They do a lot better. Those ships do a lot better out in the sea during a big storm than they do in port. Meteorologists are saying they expect rainfall from Hurricane Florence to measure in feet, not inches. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's Weather Prediction Center forecasts as much as 20 inches of rain, if not more, for parts of North Carolina. Rain could reach as much as 10 inches elsewhere in North Carolina, Virginia, parts of Maryland, and in Washington, D.C. There we go. They threw this in too, AP did. But one trusted computer model, the European simulation, which if you are a weather nerd like me, you know the European model, right? You look at the spaghetti models, and they do a couple. The European simulation is predicting more than 45 inches of rain in some parts of North Carolina. Now, that's like Hurricane Harvey in Houston. But the difference is they have some, you know, it depends on where they are in North Carolina. They have some taper as you go upstate. I don't know if that's going to be right on the coast or it's going to be inland. Now, once again, that is just one computer model spitting out 45 inches. But holy cow for 45 inches. We've got another day or so here. Dr. Bill was saying day and a half. It looks like a Thursday event for Florence making landfall somewhere on the Carolina coast. We'll get more from him coming up in a little bit. Also, can I get two headlines that caught my attention here. Two headlines of note here. First one came from Breitbart, okay? And the headline is, Pelosi, Dems need, as we're talking about people running to their corners, but, you know, with Nancy Pelosi, I'll probably be guilty of that. The headline, Pelosi, Dems need new blood, but I'm here as long as Trump is in the White House. So House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi revealed that though she agrees that Democrats need new blood, she's not going anywhere so long as Donald Trump is president. Okay, so there's, remember the audio with her talking about, I have people that do the tweeting, or I have people that, like, she's trying to sound relevant, you know, trying to sound hip and failing at it. Nancy Pelosi says, we do need new blood, but she's not going anywhere. And then I saw this other story. So that one's from Breitbart. Then I see a New York Post story that says, and I see these within like 7 minutes of each other, so bear with me. New study has found that you may be able to live a longer, healthier life if you drink young people's blood. Now, keep your children away from Pelosi once you hear the story. Research found that when people over 35 were injected with plasma from teenage blood, there was a real improvement in their biomarkers for diseases, and it's a stretch, but somewhere down the line, people might find that drinking young people's blood is good for them. Cue all the vampire jokes. The study says, here it is, at least in theory, the researchers found that when people over 35 years old were injected with plasma from teenage blood, there was a real improvement in their biomarkers for diseases, and in animal tests, older animals' brains got sharper when they were injected with younger blood. So I'm scared that I do this story, and next thing you know, there'll be like some rash of vampire stories here in town, and I'll feel like some kind of responsibility. Do not go do that. And this is just some research saying that this is a thing, the teenage plasma, and but then it's the story is right up against Nancy Pelosi reveals that she agrees that the Democrats need new blood. Now, when you see that headline, you may think that means she thinks there should be some younger Democrats go to Washington. But then I hear this and I think, well, quite possibly she's seen this other story and she's planning to go get their blood. You know, it's not a sure thing, but it's a possibility. Also, John Sharp's story had a lot of people talking. I put this up on Twitter earlier about the Reverend Mac Morris. Said, to quote John from AL.com, said the Reverend Mac Morris took a hold of an old Nike headband and wristband. Side note, I like the fact that he still had those somewhere. Held them both up before a packed church and cut them. Said, I ain't using that no more. End quote. That's from Morris, the senior pastor of Woodridge Baptist Church in West Mobile. He said that on Sunday during his sermon. He said, I bought my last pair of Nike shoes. The reason? Well, Morris, during a sermon titled The Storms of Life, said it was in protest to the Oregon-based apparel company's recent advertising campaign centered around Colin Kaepernick, the professional football player who was the first athlete to take a knee during the national anthem that triggered a firestorm of controversy that exists to this day. Kaepernick's protest centered around concerns about police behavior and racial injustices in America. Morris, the pastor, went on to say he's inked a contract with Nike. No one knows or is telling how many multi-million dollars that is going to be simply because he won't stand when the national anthem is sung, end quote. Morris did go on and say, America may not be the best country in the world, and we have a lot of faults, but I'll tell you what, a lot of folks died for the sake of what that flag represents, end quote. Morris received standing applause from the church members. Went on to say, I know there are a lot of people in general who are very upset. I know there are a lot of high schools and colleges who are dropping Nike. Some folks are tied to long-term contracts, so I don't think we've seen the end of this. It's a groundswell. I think Nike personally made a calculated decision. So the tearing up, it wasn't burning the Nike shoes, but it was cutting the Nike headband and wristband. So 1980s, before that packed church. And we'll get some more discussion on that when we come up, come back. And also coming up today, Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran joins us. Your chance to ask the sheriff as we do the second Tuesday of every month. But this one, extra special time to talk with him on this 9/11.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 120 FM Talk 106.5 and the Day Mobile on this Tuesday. Check this out. So I Googled it here. I mentioned the mandatory evacuation after reading the story. 1.5 million to be evacuated from the Carolina coast. Went through the story of the governor there in North Carolina talking about the mandatory evacuation going on. Ed, which go back to what mandatory evacuation means versus it means nobody's coming to help you. Pretty much is what it is. In other words, you put yourself in that pickle. They're not going to risk first responders, think about it, on this day to come get you. if you're stuck during a storm. But I remembered about this mandatory evacuation discussion from back during Governor Bentley's term. It's 6 years ago. Think about how times have changed. 6 years ago, the story on AL.com was from now the communications director for the city of Mobile, George Talbot. George writes this. So once again, y'all, this is old news from August 27th of 2012. Alabama Governor Bentley today amended evacuation orders covering portions of Mobile and Baldwin counties based on the updated forecast models for Tropical Storm Isaac. Now think about how weird this is, because we had Hurricane Isaac out in the Atlantic this season. This was 6 years ago. Is that all we... That's all we mothball and aim for is 6 years before we bring it back? So Isaac back then, tropical storm, and they were talking about the mandatory evacuation for Zone 1 in Mobile County, and then they had the Zone 2, and I remember talking about this. Governor Bentley back then was asking for like evacuation of areas that were like up in town, and it was unreal back then. But I remember that was the mandatory evacuation story. But it's okay, it was 2012 that happened. Well, we'll get more from Dr. Bill. Somebody asking about the storm. We'll get more from Dr. Bill coming up. I got a pair of stories here I want to get to as well as we talk about, number one, the president's speech today, President Trump's speech at Shanksville. It seems to be pretty well received out there, and a powerful speech at the Flight 93 Memorial, which, by the way, if you get a chance, check out my Twitter feed at FMTalk1065. I was at the Flight 93 Memorial back in May and took a few pictures while I was there. A very moving memorial run by the National Park Service there. If you are in anywhere near, or even if you're in D.C. and got to make the longer drive, go out there, Shanksville, and see that memorial now with those chimes, those 40 chimes, wind chimes, to represent the voices of those that died, the heroes on that flight. You can check it out in Shanksville, which is south central Pennsylvania it's pretty close down to the West Virginia border there, West Virginia, Maryland border. And you can probably 2.5 hours from D.C., something like that, maybe three hours from D.C. to get to Shanksville. But it's if you're going to be in that area doing a family vacation or whatever, going to the Capitol, may want to put that on your list. But those pictures over on my Twitter feed at FMTalk1065. So the president has his speech today, which is being, I think, warmly received, even though I heard Laura Ingraham talking about it earlier, the worries about the midterms here. You've heard people talking about the worries of the midterm elections for Republicans out there and how this is tied to the president's popularity level. And I think 38% approval rating is what the most recent numbers are. But I want to compare two stories here. Number one, small business optimism surges to the highest level ever. Right now, like today, small business optimism topping the previous record that happened under President Reagan. You would talk about the strong economies. CNBC has a story. It says U.S. small business optimism surged to a record in August as the tax cuts and deregulation efforts of President Donald Trump and the Republican-led Congress led to more sales, hiring, and investment, according to a survey by the National Federation of Independent Business. The NFIB Small Business Optimism Index jumped to 108.8 last month. That is the highest level ever recorded in the survey's 45-year history, and above the previous record of 108 set back in 1983 during the second year of the Reagan presidency. The August figure was 107.9 in July, so it went up from July to August. The NFIB noted record readings for job creation plans and the amount of owners saying it was a good time to expand. Capital spending plans were the highest since they were in 2007, obviously before the bottom fell out of that thing. Quote here from NFIB President and CEO Juanita Duggan, who said, "Today's groundbreaking numbers are demonstrative of what I've been hearing every day from small business owners, that business is booming. As the tax and regulatory landscape changed, so did small business expectations and plans," end quote. Small businesses have been the key beneficiary of Trump's economic plans. U.S. economy expanded by 4.2% in the second quarter, the fastest pace in nearly 4 years. Okay, so Robert Kennedy Jr. was in here talking earlier about what goes up at the same time is deficit spending, and I agree. This has been something that's done by both Republican administrations and Democrats. the very few people like me that are cranks about not spending money we don't have, we don't get listened to, so I've got to be part of the conversation. I'm looking at a deficit spending situation, and right now the market loves it. And this is what I'm wondering about. So you have the fears for the Republicans in the midterms. Yeah, the fears for Republicans, the number of seats that could switch, the House could switch, right? Or at best case, maybe break even, they're saying, the pointy heads. But you have that story, okay, that story that small business, nationally, optimism, the highest level ever. In other words, people are selling widgets. People are getting jobs. You look at the unemployment numbers. I mean, I keep going back to, Democrat strategist James Carville said, it's economy, stupid. It was a very smart thing to say, because I believe it is. And then let me add a local story to this as well, too. If we're looking at things, this is why I'm trying to understand where the breakdown is between this information and the fact that you've got these great markers here, economic markers, and then you have the reason, or you have people saying, well, the Democrats are going to clean up in the midterms because of Republican failing. You just went through this story that says NFIB says small business is charging because of President Trump's plans and what the Republicans are doing, Republican Congress. Although, have they done a better job? Sure. I don't think we need to give them a huge round of applause yet. We'll see. They got to get some more things done. But I wanted to add this story. So a story from, WPMI? I think it is WPMI, was talking about the home sales in our area, specifically Baldwin County. You see this a day? Have they updated the story yet? We've had full internet shutdown in here. Great, good. But the folks over at Local 15 or My NBC or My Local 15 NBC, what is it now? It's My NBC 15. They had a headline this morning that said, I think it's one day. I think that was the homes in Baldwin County being sold as quickly as one day. Now that's good to be a seller. I mean, maybe tough to be a buyer. And maybe, if you're a buyer, you don't think that's a great stat. But you look at a number where homes are selling like that. Small business optimism is a super high level. Unemployment rates are low. Yes, can we look at some things that we're continuing in this country, no matter who, R or D, is behind their name? They're into some version of deficit spending. I mean, it's all of them. And the idea will be, of course, a rising tide floats all boats. The economy gets better. It all comes out in the wash. I don't know. I academically, yes, I can see that argument, but a lot of times we've seen that not to be true. But I would point out that we have that. At the same time, we have homes in Baldwin County selling that quickly. How is it you have that information in front of you, and then at the same time, you have this idea that the Republicans are going to lose so badly coming up in the midterms? I don't know. Notes from the text line, is that still working? No? Just what was left up there? Okay. People asking about mandatory evacuations. The only incentive you need is to leave or die. Listen, I agree with the way that's done. If you give a mandatory evacuation, you should not risk other people's lives to go get those folks out. At the same time, if somebody wants to be that person and stay in there after an evacuation, you want to stay on some barrier island there on the North Carolina coast, not come to get you, but you do what you want. I mean, you're free to make bad decisions, I guess. Travis said this earlier on the text line. I think this is very good, Travis. Great text. Said, hey, Sean, I would like to let Robert, he's talking about Robert Kennedy Jr., who was in here earlier, I'd like to let Robert know that I am listening, and I really don't care if a candidate is running on a Republican ticket or a Democrat ticket or independent ticket. In fact, I'm more inclined to vote for a candidate who doesn't hitch his wagon to a certain party with a master lock. I prefer a candidate who uses a shear pin. The political question in upcoming elections is to impeach or not to impeach. Be interesting. All right. Coming back after the break, we'll be talking to Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran. It's your chance to ask the sheriff. Plus, I've got a lot of questions to ask the sheriff, especially today on this 9/11, and it comes to first responders and what they go through still 17 years later. And also, I think he was at the Blue Mass at the Cathedral today. We'll get some response on that. Speaking of today, if you're a first responder, law enforcement, you can go by Original Oyster House, either location. the one on the causeway or the one in Gulf Shores until 4 o'clock this afternoon, and it's lunch on them, so stop on in sometime before 4 o'clock this afternoon, either location, and first responders at Goldfinger's today on Dolphin Street. This may be true for Saraland. I don't have that in front of me, but I know the Goldfinger's on Dolphin Street there, kind of catty cornered across from McConnell. They're doing 50% off for first responders as well. So that's going on this 9/11. All right, coming right back, Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran, my guest. And remember, more information about shows you might have missed. You want to hear some interview from this morning or some show that played over the weekend or something like that. Podcast available. You can check them out through our website, fmtalk1065.com. Also, subscribe, probably the best way. Subscribe for Apple phone folks. If you got an iPhone, you go to iTunes. You got an Android phone, Stitcher, about my favorite app there. You get the podcast delivered right there to your phone for free. All right, 1:30, we're coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 1:35, FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile on this Tuesday, second Tuesday of the month, when I get to see Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran in studio. Thanks for coming in.
Glad to be here, Sean.
I know you were just leaving the Blue Mass at the Cathedral.
I did. It was a very nice celebration.
And tell folks about Blue Mass.
Blue Mass is in remembrance of first responders. It started after 9/11, you know, 17 years ago, and it's in remembrance of those first responders that lost their lives, but it's also dedicated to the men and women that are still first responders and have either sacrificed their lives or are still currently working.
You said a full house down there today?
It was full house. All the pews are full, standing room only, and let me give a shout out to the St. Michael's choir high school over there, new high school in Baldwin County. They were outstanding.
Well done. I mean, the new choir on the block, and they're they're bringing it. Good for St. Michael's. Was talking about this beginning of the show. I talked to with the former mayor of Gadsden, Steve Means, who is now living in our area, and he was 7-term mayor up there. We're talking about his remembrances of getting the call as a mayor on 9/11 17 years ago, and kind of what they did step by step. From a law enforcement perspective, what was this day like for you 17 years ago?
Oh, it was shock and awe. I mean, when it happened, the first plane hit the first trade tower. I was giving a speech down at City Hall about United Fund, and left, went back to headquarters, phone was ringing off the hook, and turned on the national news and saw the second plane hit the second building, was speaking on the phone with Mayor Dow at that time and the public safety director, and handling a bunch of different calls about what we were going to do locally, and getting calls from many of the federal agencies seeking our help and assistance at the local level.
Yeah, I wonder about that, and maybe it would be significant anywhere, but I'm thinking with us as a port city and all these things that we didn't know. I mean, this is a weird thing. You think about how history, now in retrospect, we know that, okay, well, here was the breadth, here was the scope of the attacks, but that day, none of us knew that there wasn't something
planted
next
locally
and next
everywhere,
and next,
exactly, yeah. Next to next. And of course, remember, every plane in the air had to land somewhere, and so Mobile Airport, you know, all these incoming flights and thousands of people just, you know, stuck at the airport, and airport police being a small force, they were asking us for assistance, and U.S. Marshals, they were asking assistance around the federal courthouses, you know, because they didn't know which would be attacked next.
So, as you, there's no way really to have trained for that. I mean, obviously you train for emergencies in law enforcement, but something that you're being asked at a local and a municipal level, asking to have a plan to react to national terrorism.
Yeah, well, I mean, we had been taught through different classes, you know, about terrorists and the different
groups. Really, that was a discussion.
It was coming up. I mean, because I guess nationwide we were learning about it, but still not being able to put our hands completely around it, just what they were capable of doing and the means of which they would go to. But it certainly ramped up afterwards and has been ramped up ever since.
I mean, like folks in your position in those days to say, you know, you've got somebody, you've got a mayor going, what's next? And you've got to figure out where we might be weak as a city, right? Where they might
strike.
That's
right.
I mean, you've got to...
You know, here in Mobile County, you know, you have all your chemical plants, and that was a big concern.
I mean, on that day, did you think about that? Did y'all go, oh gosh?
Yeah, that was exactly. That was some of the things that we knew. These were easy targets that could have catastrophic consequences if a terrorist got in there and exploded some and got, right, you know, poisonous chemicals into the air and all
so
such as that.
So how do you begin to secure those? You go from zero at the start, you're given that speech, to we are under attack, and now you've got people asking you, how are you going to secure this stuff, right?
Sure.
How the heck do you, my gosh.
You know, but I think that's what law enforcement is trained in so many different ways as problem solvers. They just, you do it over and over routinely to solve any types of problems. You know, oftentimes law enforcement is the person of last resort, you know, the mental ill patient that's off his rocker, you know, and no one's been able to help him. Well, the police are called to the scene to solve it, you know, or the, or, you know, destitute kids or something found starving somewhere, you know, law enforcement shows up.
And that's what y'all are pros at. And that's,
so but we solve problems and through teamwork.
Well, that's the thing, because I'm thinking about the number of places. If we just had, and not, yeah, Lord knows I'm not going to say anything that's going to give anybody, nobody say, oh, you're giving them ideas. Come on.
Yeah.
You know, not only do we, it's not like we had one chemical plant, one tunnel, one bridge. We have multiple
I mean,
tunnels and bridges and chemical plants and you know,
vulnerable. And of course, since that time,
shipyards,
I mean,
and you know,
there's been a tremendous amount of work done to secure these places, to harden them as targets, you know, and you know, even things from
back
the
then,
local water system. But back then, you didn't really know. Could someone poison the water system?
I remember
could
that was a discussion,
you know,
wasn't it?
All of that kind of stuff was really new to everybody, and even to the scientists, you know, would have to dispel a lot of the rumors as well about, you know, could you do this, could you do that, and people would just get spun up and scared.
Yeah, I mean, I remember them having groups that of citizens that would be polled by different groups out there, would talk to folks to find out ideas, maybe from asymmetric thinkers, of how somebody could hurt us.
Sure.
And people put the ideas up and give those to those agencies so they could look into those
things. Right. That goes into that plan and is identify your weaknesses and how could you attack it. And then, okay, let's build a defense for it. And slowly but surely, over the last 17 years, we've all across this country have hardened some of the most vulnerable targets and most dangerous ones, and probably still to this day, I would tell you that we're still at it, you know, because times change and weapons of whatever type of destruction change as well.
Well, that's 17 years since. I'm just thinking about you with 17 minutes on this day 17 years ago. And have just to have had cameras following y'all around that day, just your recollections are something, because I can only imagine with the responsibility you have with being asked, how are you securing this? How are you doing this? Mm-hmm. And you're just being thrown. I mean, that is not what you expected on that given morning, on a Tuesday morning, to be dealing with.
It was a pretty easy day, I thought.
Yeah.
to start with.
Yeah, there's no way to get ready for that during your cup of coffee, is there?
Right.
Yeah. Grab some calls, too. It's your chance to ask the sheriff. If you got questions for Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran, you can ask him at 343-0106 on the phone or on the text line. I'll grab one from David in Mobile first. Hey, David.
Hey, guys. Hey, Sheriff.
Hi, David.
I have a couple of quick questions. Number one, is the sheriff getting ready to fire up the food trailer and send it to the Carolinas?
I don't know. That thought crossed my mind last night.
Let's explain that to folks who have forgotten.
We fired up the food trailer after the Hurricane Harvey hit Houston last year and sent a team of deputies out there and fed, I think, 12 to 15,000 meals to the Houston police officers.
And then my next question is this. The long shifts that law enforcement officers around the country have recently come into focus in the national news with that incident with the female officer in Dallas. And I wanted to know what kind of tools and procedures does the Sheriff's Department have in place to kind of fight the mental fatigue and the mental strain that those type of 12 to 15-hour shifts can put on a deputy or a law enforcement officer in this country.
Well, I think the 12-hour shift is a common shift all across the country.
Is that the normal? That's the normal?
That's become pretty normal, and it sort of works out. But we have to rely on the deputies as well as their supervisors to monitor them and sort of self-report. I mean, it's just no easy way to combat that. And I know that's a tragedy, but I'm still interested to see just what if there's more to come out on that case, terrible case, the case he saw about the Dallas police officer. Went in the wrong house and killed a neighbor by mistake.
Right. Well, I mean, the allegation is how did this happen? But, I want to say, don't you know your place versus somebody else's residence? But until I'm like you, I mean, that's my initial gut reaction, but I don't have all the information.
Yeah. I've learned a little bit more information, but it's still a lot I'd like to know. But his apartments are very similar, and she was on the one floor below or one floor above where she lived, and in the front of the apartments from the inside hallway or something look all the same, and apparently the door was left ajar, and she was able to go in it. And of course, you know, if you try to think for her, you say, well, gosh, my apartment, somebody must be in my apartment, and my door's ajar, and you push the door open, it's dark, and you think, uh-oh, I normally have lights on, and then all of a sudden there's someone appears in your thing. You can just play it from her perspective, it's just a terrible tragedy, whether or not it's manslaughter, is it just a terrible, terrible, harmful mistake. You know, it's, I know people are clamoring for she needs to be charged, but we really need to take all the facts and move slowly with it.
You and I have talked about this so many times, Sheriff, but here we are talking about a case that the national cases that should be absolutely top of the news stack in their given cities and states to some degree, right? They end up becoming national stories. Right. So we discuss them. And not that it's a problem. I think we can all learn from them. But it seems like, people say, it seems like there's something like this. And I don't know if there's guilt in this case or what's going on. But but you'll say, oh, this is going on all the time. But what I think people get lost in is they think that because they're hearing that story from Texas, or they're hearing it from New York, or they're hearing it from Washington State, that all just gets in their mind like it's happening.
Happening all the time, everywhere. And it's just not. There's just freak accidents or freak, even the bad actions of officers, they're far and few between, but they get reported from anywhere in the country, so it makes it look like there's more.
All right, coming right back, more with Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran. You got a question? Text it in, call it in, 343-0106, 343-0106.
Listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, 150 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Tuesday, and our chance to ask the sheriff, Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran, in studio, and remind folks too, if they want to reach out to the sheriff's department for a variety of reasons, y'all make it pretty easy through social media and the apps out there.
Absolutely. You can download our app, Team Sheriff, on the app, and you can report stuff to us, keep up with us on the news happenings, or you can like us on Facebook. And
y'all are busy over there on the Facebook,
Twitter, and Instagram.
Yeah, y'all are busy on your social media platforms.
We get a lot of support out of the community and solve a lot of crimes that way, Sean.
Also, I mean, thank goodness it's not us. Our hearts are with the folks that are in the Carolinas right now facing Hurricane Florence. But I mentioned this before you got in. I'd like to get your perspective. Obviously, with all your years in law enforcement, first responder, public safety, mandatory evacuations. Okay, they've called for $1.5 billion under a mandatory evacuation in the Carolina coast. There's some similarities in the Carolinas with barrier islands and low coastline to areas of South Mobile County, right?
Exactly. And I've never been a big fan of mandatory evacuations. I mean, most people that live on the water should have enough sense to know they've got to get away from the storm surge. And then when you mandatory tell everybody to get out of town, it just jams the highways. And sometimes there's been cases where lives have been lost attributable to getting caught in traffic jams and running out of gas and just not being able to get out of harm's way. But the ability for people, if they've got a safe place to stay, you know, then they're there to available to help clean up and pick up and secure. But if you evacuate a whole area and not everybody leaves, then it's up for pilfering and stuff like that. So it creates as many problems sometimes as it solves.
Right. So mandatory evacuation, is there only one level? Is it mandatory or nothing, or is it recommended? I mean, is it a graduated scale?
We frequently recommend, you know, various areas and certainly along the low-lying areas when there's going to be a storm surge. You know, if you live on the water or near water, or you know your area is flooded in the past, then you certainly need to get out. But it's the old adage is run from the water, hide from the wind. Mm-hmm. And that's no simple way of saying it. If you're vulnerable to the water, you're more likely to die from water than you are from wind. And I mean, it's just proven fact time and time again.
Well, and that's one of the things that I think has lost. You and I were talking about it during the news break. And Mobile County is a great example of that when we deal with somebody who's not from around here. It could even be out of Montgomery or definitely out of Washington. We've dealt with it with issues of getting redlining for insurance and different things. But this idea that it's all one pay, they'll say, well, this is a low area of Mobile County. Yeah, and then half a mile away from there, it's 60 feet higher. I mean, this idea that this is not Southeast Louisiana.
That's correct.
We have different, we have contour. Absolutely, there are people in our area, even away from the coast, that are on canals and all that stuff that can get surge and flooding. And four blocks over, there's people have no chance of getting anything.
Yeah, we've had difficulties and issues over the years dealing with the state here locally, but the last several years, I guess, we've come a long ways in the local EMA from Baldwin County and Mobile County. We had an instance about a year and a half ago where at first the governor was, or not her, but her EMA director or something state was talking about a mandatory evacuation for one of these storms.
Right.
And we were able to talk him out of it, but he was trying to err on the side of safety, but
right.
he listened to both EMA directors from Mobile and Baldwin County, and Sheriff O'Leary myself.
Wait,
and
they listened to local folks?
Well, this they started, yeah.
How
and
about
I hope
that?
They continue because we've, you know, between several of us, we've been here a long time, and
right.
we understand how to deal with it. And
well, you can tell them to be like, you know, sure, y'all have got a you know reading that this area over here floods, but two blocks away.
Right.
You know, because you've physically been there. You know
yeah,
that this
area
is not going
to... areas in Mobile County completely to which ones are going to flood and which ones aren't. And so through EMA, we'll put out those areas. These people need to evacuate. These people need to move out. If you lie particularly along these low-lying areas, you need to move. And, you know, we set up evacuation plans for them. Sometimes we utilize the public buses, you know, the school buses. And we get people out and set them up in... you know, shelters, and there's more and more of that, you know, sheltering locally rather than shipping people out of town.
I see this from the text line. This reminds me of what somebody told me they were doing in New Orleans as well, but this texter says, years ago when I was in high school, I had a sheriff's deputy tell me one time the way they got people to evacuate Gulf Shores and Orange Beach is they would go door-to-door telling people there was a mandatory evacuation, and if they said they were going to stay, they handed them a tow tag and said, please please fill this out so when they're asked, you know, and I heard that New Orleans, they were saying, oh, on the news, they had people in the news saying they're bringing more body bags in or something like that.
I didn't hear the part about the body bags, but sure, I've heard that. I've seen it done where, if not that, please use a magic marker and write your social security number on your leg or something like that. And, you know, that kind of raises the eyebrows of some people. And,
right.
And, you know, it went back in Ivan or something, you know, there were several lives lost over in, what was it, Perdido or somewhere like that. People stayed and got just blown out of their houses or something. You know?
Yeah, and listen, absolutely, this is not to say there are not absolutely storm levels that mm-hmm. would cause evacuation. There's storm surge that causes it. It's just, it's good to hear that y'all are trying to work with state officials and to explain that it's... somewhere like Mobile County, it's not all the same. When you call for, if you just use the construct of the county, and you say, oh, there's an evacuation, Citronelle is a long way away from the east end of Dauphin Island. You
sure.
know, I mean, in obviously in distance and geography.
Yeah, and we know from past experience, if you cry wolf too much, and then when you really need people to evacuate, they won't. And we had a couple of those instances several years ago where Mobileans were told mandatory evacuation, and the storm passed, went in another direction, mm-hmm. and you know those of us that stayed, it was bright and sunny and no rain, and so you know those people that evacuated the next time, if they really needed to, they'd be less likely to. So it's, you know, it's easy sometimes. People are scared to make those decisions, but we make the decisions with the best of information we have, and maybe we'll be wrong sometime, but most times we're right. And
yeah. Well, it's good to know, and it's good to know. I did not know that they're. I'm happy that they're listening now to folks at a local level, because that is, I mean, you can make all the decisions you want in Washington or Montgomery, but until you talk to people, I mean, who would be more motivated to make sure that people are safe than the sheriff in the given county you're trying to evacuate?
Exactly. I mean, the elected officials that run for office, they're certainly want to. Do right, but Alabama, let me put this, we've been blessed to have good directors of state EMA. In fact, what I think the director of FEMA right now, Brock Long is his mm-hmm. name, was a former director of state EMA in Alabama, and we've had other people that were directors for FEMA became directors of EMA in Alabama, so we've had a really great group of people to learn from in Alabama. And
I'm glad you said that.
Many hurricanes and many tornadoes to deal with.
Because I did not Google it, but I've been thinking. And I should have done it, but I was like, Brock Long, I've met Brock Long, I've met, how the heck did I meet the head of, and mm-hmm. it turns out, okay, there you mm-hmm. go, there's a connection.
Yeah, and the guy that's head of EMA right now is a very impressive guy. He's a retired, I think, colonel, had a big job in the Air Force, fighter pilots, and ran, I think, a couple of the whole shebangs over Iraq or something like that, and very impressive, but a long military thing, but a military planner, and so he probably is fitting right in. He had to learn a few of the local ins and outs.
But you imagine they're over in the Carolinas, they're ready for a stress test of this.
I'll be watching it very closely, because once again, we can learn from others' successes or their failures, and you know, they'll be certainly in our thoughts what they're going through.
All right. Remind folks once again, even if they just want to check out the it is the most popular part of the app to see who's in jail.
Who's in jail? Yeah, you can get that on the app, and you can see who's wanted. And we had a discussion this morning. We've arrested several people where people call in and say, "Look, you've got warrants for this person, and this is where they live now." And we get that almost every couple of days. Somebody let us know. See, they can check our website and see if you know your name and find out they have warrants. And, you know, we've got the warrants, but we don't know where they're at. But if you'll tell us where they're at, we'll go pick them up.
There you go. So you do that through the app. And also, I know that you're using the social media platforms, too, to help with your deputies, whether it be things stolen from houses or those kind of things, the videos that people can give you to share. It can
really
help. We
share videos of suspects, and somebody knows them. And there's more and more video available to us, and we get it out quickly. And the quicker we can catch a person that commits a crime, the less likely, they'll commit a spree of crimes.
That's right.
Usually
come to my house.
Just one. That's right. Before they get to your house, we want to catch them.
That's right. Sheriff, as always, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Sean. As always, I enjoy your show.
And it's Paul Feinbaum time. Yeah, I think he comes on next. We got a little bit of college football to talk about. The weekend ahead, and maybe not so many cream puff games, right, Dalton? We'll get into it coming up in just about a minute and 10 seconds. We'll be back with you tomorrow morning, bright and early, for Mobile Mornings here on FM Talk 1065, online, fmtalk1065.com. Check out our show schedule, stream the station, and get our podcast.